Hey, hey, this is Allie, and welcome to the Allie Worthington Show. It's where we gather, learn, share stories, and have a great time. Every week, I'll be chatting with a friend who I know, who I like, and I respect, and I want to learn something from. And after we have that discussion, we are going to have coaching time. So I'm going to be answering your questions about life, about faith, and about business. Welcome to the show today. We are with Toni Collier, and we're going to learn all about finding wholeness and how beauty can come from something broken. Toni's been through a lot, and she has some great insight for us on being brave and how we can learn to rewrite our stories. This is a really good one. Now, after we talk with Toni, I'm answering a question in coaching time today. Here's the question. You ready for this? How did you handle chores with all of your boys? I have so much to say on this. It's going to be super practical, and I'll give you a little insight on how I manage things at my house. And don't forget, starting next month, I'm giving away 5 free coaching calls every month. So if you are a business person, if you are executive, if you are an entrepreneur and you need help in your business, I am donating 5 calls in January, 5 calls in December. So you can go to allieworthington.com/free coaching and go ahead and apply. I love doing this. This is one of my favorite things I do all year. Now, for the final segment of the show, I have a movie for you, a song, and not really a recommendation. I have a tip, something that I do that a friend of mine noticed the other day, and she had never seen it nor heard of it. So I thought I should tell you. Okay, without further ado, here's Toni. Hey, Toni, welcome to the show.
We made it.
I want to start off by asking you to talk a little bit about something you put on Instagram recently. You put on a reel that was a word to everybody. You were talking about how people are out here trying to heal in places where people have hurt them. Talk about that a little
good.
Bit.
Yeah, what I said in the reel was you cannot heal with the people and in the places that broke you in the first place. And the truth is, I only have the authority to say that, to post things like that, because I've done it. I was at a really toxic church, my first church, first pastor, really thought I was doing it well, but I was being spiritually manipulated. And when I transitioned out, because I was going through divorce and all the other things, I told the pastor, like, I really need to take a break. And he said that if I left the church, I would get super disconnected. I'd probably lose access to my purpose. And I mean, that's just not true. And I remember leaving and transitioning out of the church, but longing for community, feeling so alone and so desperate and so insecure on my own that I went back to the church for a Wednesday night service. And I was like, surely they're going to love on me. It's going to be good. No, that did not happen. Everyone ignored me, including the pastor. And it was incredibly hurtful. I remember walking out of church, a church service, shaking with anxiety and wanting to end my life because the community that I'd known, the faith that I'd known had been rocked. And the truth is, I was worshiping a pastor, not a savior in so many ways. And so I have to own that. But also it was just a really toxic environment. When I decided and made the vow that I would not go back to that church for at least a year, at least 2 years, and I would go on a healing journey. One, I realized that I should never go back, which is fine. Okay. But if I chose to, I would now have the resilience and the health that I need to exist there with boundaries and not be impacted again. But yeah, man, it's unfortunate. We go back because it's familiar. We go back because we're insecure. We don't want to be alone. We don't want to be abandoned, but we can't. We have to get in safe places so that we can heal.
So good. I mean, which is the basis of your whole new book. So let's hear a little bit about your story because you have quite a story.
Oh, it's a lot of spice, not a lot of sugar. You know what I'm saying? But
Take us back to where you were right before you went back to that church.
Ooh, that's so good. 24-year-old Toni had gone through so much, unfortunately. When I was young, my mom got sick. She had a massive stroke. She started having seizures. And I started taking care of her at just 8 years old. Okay. And it rocked my entire childhood. The awe and the wonder and the nurturing. I mean, it was gone. She was incapable. It broke up our family in so many ways. We were a blended family. My brothers went to go live with their mom. I had a brother that turned to alcohol and drugs, and it was tough. And so that kind of started this performer's heart cultivation in me, wanting to protect everyone else, thinking that I was strong enough to fend off all harm from all other people, that I was essentially being God, just at 8 years old. And that turned into sexual manipulation with family members, being a very vulnerable child, not being protected. started smoking weed and drinking alcohol to numb at 14 and 15, left my parents' house at 16 and went to college and partied, twerked, popped, drank everything.
How are you able to act out but still graduate college?
Here's what happens. Okay. One, I do believe that hurt and hope can coexist, that we can be going through things and we can be doing our best to survive those things. And we can also have the capacity to put up a front. As kids, we do what we need to do to survive. A lot of those wounds, a lot of the naivety of our childhood really only starts to manifest when we are adults, when we get a little bit older and our trauma catches up to us. But also, I'm a 3 on the Enneagram. I am an achiever through and through, and there's toxic achievement and there's just regular achievement. And I had a toxic achievement trait. I wanted to make my dad proud. He was really verbally abusive growing up. We've since redeemed our relationship, but I wanted to make him proud. I wanted him to see all that I can do. And so I was captain of the cheerleading team, kind of living this double life. I was in the debate team and thespian society as an actress. And then I was sneaking out the house with a little boy, living my best life and drinking and numbing the pain. And it was just this cycle of performance and validation. And so that is how.
Wow. Okay. How did you get to the point where you said, I've got to heal? Because a lot of people go through pain and go through traumatic events and go down that road and they're not able to pull it back together. What was that catalyst moment for
you? That's good. What we know and what a lot of psychologists will say is that trauma is cyclical. And so from a verbally abusive dad to I move into a verbally abusive marriage, I was 19 years old. I got married, finally got saved at 21, started serving at a church as a youth director, youth volunteer, then became a youth pastor. And I remember I had my daughter Dylan at 23 in this toxic marriage, putting up a front on stage and doors ripped off the hinges and holes punched in the walls at home. And I remember one day arguing with her dad and I saw fear in her eyes for the first time. And I said, oh, well, this ain't it. This is not it. And sometimes our choice to heal is not for us, but it's for the benefit of someone else. And for me, it was for my daughter. I transitioned out of the church, transitioned out of the marriage, got a divorce. And I said, if for anybody, I got to be whole for my daughter. You know, as beautiful as that sound, it's also super insecure because I didn't feel like I was worthy of healing, but I had someone to fight for. And so, started a healing journey.
The traumatic cycle, the abusive cycle, the toxic cycle, it ends with you. Yep. It's not going further. Another generation. That is fantastic. I think that so many women find themselves in that cycle, but because it's what they know, it's what their mothers knew, it's what their grandmothers knew, they don't believe that there's a way out for them.
Ali, you know what's so interesting? I learned this from a domestic violence advocate. She said, when we are in our mother's wounds, we have all of our little eggs, all of our reproductive eggs inside of us already, which then means that when my mom was inside of my grandmother, all the abuse that my grandmother went through really was passed down to my mother, who was in her belly, and then passed down to me, who was in her ovaries and in her eggs. And so it's interesting that the awareness of that makes me say, my daughter was in my belly when abuse happened to me. And so now we have to choose to live a life on the offense, not the defense. I know that it has the potential to be a part of her story. And so now I have to do my work and then help her do her work to create a cushion so that that doesn't touch our story.
It's so good. Now, you raised her as a single mom for a couple of years.
Just a couple of years, yeah.
Now, what advice do you have for women who are raising kids without a partner, whether it's death or divorce or abandonment? Yeah. So many women, that is their story.
Well, here's the deal. What's great is, again, I've seen so much restoration and redemption in my life. I'm just freaking shocked every day. One of the things that's been redeemed is Dylan's relationship with her dad. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about that is when I went to counseling and when we put Dylan in behavior counseling, because again, a life on the offense, not the defense, her counselor said, as a single mother with a father that is not, it is still alive, that is present and can have the potential to be present in Dylan's life, you want to think about your kids' lives as buckets. What I would tell single moms out there that does have a spouse in their life, if that spouse or if that ex-spouse, if that father, parent, whatever, is present and able to care for the kids, do not try to fill their bucket. Kids have buckets, and I have a mommy bucket. There's a grandmother bucket. There's a bonus dad bucket with my new husband, Sam. But there's a dad bucket that none of us can fill. And our biggest prayer always was that Dylan's dad would be able to fill that bucket. that I would be able to put all of my hurt to the side, that I would be able to put my insecurity to the side, my bitterness, my anger towards him, and really assess if he was in a place to care for her. And he was, and allow him to fill his bucket and give every opportunity needed to do that. If that's not possible, I would say build a village. Even if you're married, we want other adults to be pouring into our kids, because there is a very different relationship that small group leaders, youth pastors, et cetera, as a former youth pastor, has with children. And we need help. I mean, we see it in the Bible all around. They developed community and generations in community. Like, they was all together, okay, helping with everybody kids. And we need that. And so I would just say, lean into community. Do not try to be what God has not created you to be. We're mothers, not fathers. And that's okay.
I've been doing a lot of research on motherhood for the past 2 years. And I found study after study showing the more friends a mother has, strong connections, normally about 3 to 4, kind of being that prime number, the better off her children are. Because 100%. When hard times come, it's those friends who come along beside you. They give you emotional support. They give you help. You have resources in a way that if you're isolated, you just don't have.
You don't have it.
Mm-mm. Okay. What does that look like for you, intentionally building community for your own mental health, for your daughter, for everything? It's so easy when we are in pain to kind of pull into ourselves. And we know when we withdraw, loneliness happens and depression happens and we're at risk of all these things. How do you intentionally build community?
So in my new book, Brave Enough to be Broken, we have an entire chapter, and the way that on community and the way that the book flows is there's like chapter and then there's practical to meet that chapter. And so in the practical part of community, we talk about the fact that Jesus had circles too, and that when we get intentional about how we structure our friendship circles, we can ultimately live healthier lives. So for me, my inner circle, that intimate, really deep circle, it ain't got nobody but Jesus. Okay. It is me and the Lord. Okay. And we see that in the life of Jesus. It was just him and God. Outside of that are really intimate friends that know me through and through, all my ratchet business, all my stuff that could get me canceled. I mean, all the things. Okay. Thankfully, I'm pretty vulnerable and I just tell everybody my business, but there are only some people that can tend to that part of my heart. And we see that in Jesus's life, the three that he was really, really close to. And so I would say, start to build that out. In the book, there's a little diagram, and you can like start to figure out which people are supposed to be in which levels of circles, and then be okay to transition some of them suckers out. Like, there have been many friendships that I've had that said, you know what? I don't have to like X you out. I don't have to ghost you. I don't have to be rude and transition and cut you out of my life, but I can place some boundaries on you, and I can put you in places where you're not so close to my heart that you have access to hurt me. And so we got to do community well, man. It's crazy out here.
I think that for Christian women, it's especially hard because we go, oh, we're supposed to love everybody. We're supposed to be nice to everybody. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings.
It's going to be a no.
We do need those boundaries, and we do need to move people around.
Yeah. And there's been friends in my life, and they can be honest about it to this day, where they were going through a season that they were going through a hard season, a really dark season, and it started to leak out on their friendships, on their relationships. And here's the truth. Like, we want to be there for people, but we don't need to get hurt in the process. There have been friends that I've transitioned to a safer space and still tended to them and helped them. But I said, you can't have access to my heart while you're in this dark space, leaking all over the place. Now, sis, when we get you all good to go and cleaned up, you can come back in. Doesn't take away any kind of love, doesn't take any kind of, you know, feelings away, but it does protect you so that the friendship can last longer in the long run anyway.
That's so good. Now, speaking of things Christian women have a hard time with, here's another one. Identifying a space, a relationship, a workplace that's toxic. What are some signs? What are some like feelings in your body? What are things that we need to listen to so we can understand maybe this person isn't toxic, but this person may be toxic for me. Maybe this environment isn't just toxic, it's toxic for me. What are some of those signs?
First of all, I just want to say, Allie, there's maturity in what you just said and the way you unpacked it, because, you know, we've been throwing around the word toxic in this world right now, right? Like, everybody toxic, this toxic, that's toxic, all the things just is toxic. And I love that you differentiate it. Like, this may be toxic for me. I have friends that can like, you know, banter back and forth. They, you know, make fun of each other, call people's names. You can't do that around here. Okay. Like, that's toxic for me. I came from verbal abuse. I would say the first thing though, that we have to do is we have to become aware of what we need. Oftentimes some of the reason why we get into abusive relationships, toxic relationships, and toxic environments is because there's a toxic part of us that craves it, and it acts like a magnet. The reason why I ended up in a toxic church, in a toxic marriage, is because I was used to verbal abuse. It had become normal to me. It wasn't until I went into counseling and did my work that I said, oh, it's not normal. And it can be very traumatic to be yelled at and cursed out. That kind of stuff didn't faze me. Getting with my husband, Sam, in my second marriage, he was like, hey, whoa, the raising of the voice, the slamming of the doors, what are you doing here? He's like, that's crazy. That didn't happen in my upbringing. Like, you're gonna have to change that. And I was like, well, what do you mean? Like, this is just how we argue. Well, when I became healthier and I realized that was not healthy, I was able to put boundaries in place for people in my life that still did that. My dad was one of those people. I remember looking him in the eye and saying, I get emotional about this, and saying, I want a relationship with you. I want you to be the dad that I long for, that I dream about. But you can't talk to me like that anymore. I am healing. I want better for Dylan, my daughter. I want better for myself. And if you're going to continue to talk to me in that way, then I'm going to have to put a boundary up with you. We can't just be on the phone every single day. It's just not going to happen anymore. And so I think awareness is just good, Allie, for us, our own research, our own work. And then from there, I think we can start building healthy boundaries.
That's good. That's really good. Yeah. You talked earlier about how you were numbing when you were in toxic environments and you were in the toxic marriage. Give us just an overview. What does numbing look like? How do we know if we're doing it? I'd love to hear more about that.
Well, what I love about Christianity is that we have a source who gives us access to resources. We have our Father in heaven, who is absolutely a source to our stability, to calming our anxieties, to putting faith and infusing faith into our fears. But he also gives us access to resources, the ability to not turn to idols. And the truth is, he also gives us the discernment to know when we're replacing him with resources. For me, again, like, this goes back to doing our work and awareness. I didn't even realize that I suffered with general anxiety and performance anxiety until I got into counseling. I cleaned up my life. I stopped smoking weed. And I was like, oh, snap. Like, I've been numbing for so long, I didn't even realize I had this issue. And so what happens is we put a Band-Aid on our unhealth. And we just think like, oh, this doesn't even exist. I'm not even aware. When we take those Band-Aids off and we really expose those wounds, they have the ability to heal and seal, as Dr. Anita Phillips says, into scars. And we are even aware that we're numbing. But numbing can look like anything. Shopping, Netflix, scrolling. I mean, all the things. I had a woman in one of our course groups that just like pulled her hair out. Just her whole left side of her hair was just gone because she was trying to cope and to numb. And then community shows us that too, Allie. Like, there are people that can look outside of you and say, hey, you know, having a glass of wine every night may not be the move, sis. Okay. That you may want to back it up a little bit, because your one glass didn't turn into two and not three. And now you didn't drink a whole bottle every night, sweet girl. Okay. And people can help us do that, you know?
Yeah. And just realizing, okay, I see that I'm numbing. I see this behavior is happening. Mm-hmm. What am I trying to numb? But it's scary when we start trying to figure out, what am I trying to numb, right? Because if we're spending all of that time not wanting to deal with the feeling that we don't want to deal with, it gets really scary. Thank goodness for therapy. The Holy Spirit therapy saves us all.
Like, and I love that you said, like, all of us, we are not exempt from it. Mm-hmm. You know, we think about our mental health as this isolated space. It's like, nah, it's the same as your body. It's the same as your spiritual health, your social health, our physical health. You got to go get that thing checked out. Even for my friends, you know, I know you have friends like this, Allie, and probably even listeners. That's like, well, I've never really had any trauma in my life. I don't have a testimony. And sometimes they fall into that comparison trap. And here's the deal. We live in a fallen, broken world, the same fallen, broken world as everybody and your mama and them. Okay. And so we can't fall into the pain comparison trap, because then it steals from us, like, what we actually think is traumatic in our lives, is painful in our lives. And so everybody.
We all. Talk about the truth against lies template a little bit, because this is so good.
I love it. I went to this spiritual encounter, Chris Tomlin's wife's family, Lauren Tomlin, they do this encounter. It's so incredible. And the first day they start to ask you what lies you've believed and maybe what your core lie is. And I was like, none. Like, I'm not, what are you talking about? And then they ask you to go to God, and we have to be super silent. There's like 2 to 3 hours of this like solitude, which I'm so bad at. Gosh, I'm like making eye contact with people, like, talk to me. But when I really did press into the silence and just like wanting to hear from God, I remember getting this impression on my heart that the lie that I believed for so long is that I was just unprotected. And it made so much sense, right? I'm 8-year-old Tony. I'm making sure that my mom has her medicine. I'm praying every night that she's not going to, I'm going to wake up and not have a mom, that there will still be someone there to do my hair for picture day. Being unprotected, unsafe was entered into my story. That darkness entered into my story as a little girl. And so it's no wonder why I want to strive all the time and do everything myself, because I feel like I can do it best. That there is going to be no one that's going to protect me as good as I'm going to protect myself. Of course. And of course, the enemy would use that lie to have me making decisions about getting in poor relationships and making decisions to carry too much on my own. Of course he would use that lie. And so in the book, we talk about this idea of accessing your core lie and then speaking to that thing truth. And the truth is, Psalm 91 says to me that the Lord has angel armies around me. He has sent his angels to cover me, that nothing in the world could touch me, that other things may be destructive around me, but no harm can even graze me. And he draws this beautiful picture, you know, of like David talks about like being in this field and there's like lions coming and he's seeing all these snakes and stuff and they just can't even touch him. That truth, that's the healing balm that I needed against that lie. And that lie ain't just gone. It's not just like poof. This is a part, this is a fabric of my story.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
at least I have the equipment to speak to it, to say, you're doing too much, Tony. You're trying to protect yourself. That little girl in you, that little 8-year-old, you need to go tend to her and bring Jesus with you and tell her, hey, we are safe in the arms of our Father. It's going to be okay. Stop striving.
So good.
I can't wait for people to access that in the book. It's really cool.
Well, I love what you're doing, because as believers, for too long in the church world, it's been like, you're saved, you're good. And we have generation upon generation of believers who've been like, I'm saved, I'm good, Jesus has me. But they're limping through life, doing a lot of damage, not because they're bad people, but because there's stuff that hasn't been dealt with. There's trauma that hasn't been dealt with, and it just keeps going on generation to generation. Yeah. So I love that more church leaders are having this conversation.
It's
and
good.
Making this a normal part of life. Just like you said, your mental health is a part of your body. If your arm is broken and fallen off, you're going to get it fixed. We need to work with our hearts and our minds too.
That's good.
If someone has a friend who you can tell is going through something, what's a good approach to take that isn't going to freak her out?
Well, first and foremost, you have to assess if you even have the authority to approach that person. Are you in their inner circle, in a close enough proximity and space? You know, we try to be everybody's Holy Spirit out here. We're trying to act like saviors, and we hadn't even been invited to the table. And so I think that's the first thing we have to do, is just know where our place is when helping friends. I also, again, believe in a life on the offense, not the defense. What things do you have set in place with your friends to speak into their life when hard times come? For me and my friends, they know I have battled with anxiety for a long time. I've battled with a little depression. I have questioned my life and had suicidal ideation and thoughts. That's a part of my story. And if I'm not careful, the enemy will use that over and over and over again in high moments, in low moments, in midway moments. And so for me and my friends, we have something set in place where it's like, hey, if you're having some dark thoughts at night, you need to text me immediately. You need to call me immediately. But as much as it is on them, as it is on me, opening myself up, opening my life up to be held accountable to those dark moments. I also think that we should be curious, not condemning. We're not good at like just being curious about helping people. We just straight up come out, can't believe you're doing this. I noticed this about you, versus saying, hey, I noticed that this was happening in your life. Is there a conversation that we can have about what's going on? Is there something that you need to build up the bravery to be courageous enough to tell me about? I just want you to know I'm here and I'm just curious as to what's going on. It may not be anything at all, but just know that I'm curious and I'm praying for you and I'm covering you. I'm not convicting you. I'm not condemning you. That's not my place. I'm not your Holy Spirit, but I'm just really curious about this. And the story that I'm telling myself, like if you got a friend that's like for real in denial, it's like, no, sis, you've been sleeping with everybody. Okay. If you got a friend that's really in denial, even the approach of the story that I'm telling myself, I love that phrase. We use it in our marriage. The story that I'm telling myself is that you have been sleeping with all these men because you feel really alone. Well, I want to remind you that you may feel lonely, but you're never alone. And so that may be the wrong story that I'm telling myself. Can you help bring clarity to that?
That's good.
Easy peasy.
Yeah.
Easy peasy, guys.
You may still get your head bitten off. You're going to help your friend get there. Yeah. That's
yeah, and so also good. You're going to make her feel seen. And Dr. Kurt Thompson says this, we come into this world looking for someone looking back at us. We just want to be seen, soothed, secure, and safe. And sometimes being seen is enough to start to notice, okay, if they're noticing this about me, maybe I need to pay attention to it. Let me go to God about this until I feel safe enough to go to my friend. You know?
That's good.
So it's beautiful.
So good. Okay. Fun questions. You already told us what your Enneagram number is. You're 3.
I said it and I was like, darn it, I want to surprise
you. That's okay. That's okay. What does that look like for you in your life?
Oh, freak. The gift part about it is I'm crushing it, man. You know, the gift is I've got a lot of capacity. I'm crushing it. The shadow side is that I can be a people pleaser. I've got that 2 wing, but also that I can just try to perform all the time. My counselor calls it being a chameleon. I would change the fabric of who I am to please someone, to make them feel comfortable, to make myself feel accepted and known, and to be the best version of myself for them. When really the only version that God wants me to be is the crazy, loud, kind of ratchet sometimes Tony, who's honest about all her mess and on a healing journey forever and ever. And so those are some things for sure.
It is really impressive with you knowing that you're a 3, knowing that you have the tendency to want to make other people happy with that 2 wing, you to be like, here's me.
Sorry. Here I am.
But you don't get trapped in that need or that pressure to always look perfect because you're brave enough to tell your story to be able to help other women. I love it.
It's almost like, well, the antidote, I think, to a lot of our struggles is the opposite thing. I want to hide so that I can look perfect. The antidote to that is to say, I'm gonna live this life on full on display. I'm gonna go way against it. I'm gonna go with an upside down approach, and I'm gonna tell it all so that it doesn't even stand a chance. It's like, sorry, hide? What you talking about, girl? They know all your business. What you talking about? You already told them.
So, my philosophy in my books is I am gonna tell you everything about me that doesn't make me look good. So if you ever find out later, I'll be like, I already told you in the book. I don't even have to pretend.
I'm like, listen, I don't know what y'all gonna cancel me for. Okay. Because I done already told y'all everything. And not everything that's in my past, but everything that I'm susceptible to.
Yeah.
That's where people get it twisted. It's like, oh, she's been through this. Oh, she's, you know, used alcohol to numb. No, I can have the tendency right now here today to use alcohol to numb. And so I have to put limits on my little crazy self to say, sis, we're only going to have 1 drink, maybe 2. But if you go for 3, you probably going to be out there flashing somebody. I mean, you need to know that about yourself. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And now you canceled because you don't have no boundaries with yourself. Okay.
That's good. So, yeah. We don't want that for you. We don't want that for anybody. Okay. What about a song that you have on repeat right now?
Oh man. Get Away by Taya. I didn't even really honestly think to listen to her album. I was like, she's great. That's amazing. Taya. She's, you know, awesome. But my friend sent me this when I was in a really hard moment. I've been on the road a lot. My anxiety is starting to creep back in right now. And it's just been a lot. And she said, hey, I want you to listen to this. This is the power of community. I'm like, oh, yeah, I did see this new album. I'm on a drive to the airport and I am just freaking weeping because it talks about this concept of getting away with God wherever you are. And I forget that sometimes, you know, I'm such a performer where I'm like, quiet time has to be like the quiet time where I'm sitting at my table with a hot cup of coffee and the Bible's in front of me. And sometimes it's really just me sitting in a freaking rental car on the way to the airport saying, Jesus, I give everyone and everything to you. Come and take over. And that song, Get Away, it rocked my world. I said, well, look at that.
I have to admit, I have not listened to the album, but do love her. And I was like, okay, it was great. Yeah.
It was you on my radar. I was like, oh, what up, girl?
Okay.
That thing is powerful. I'll tell you that.
Okay. That's it. That's what I'm going to listen to. What about a movie or a TV show that you like?
Okay. I was about to say the movie or TV show that I've been watching, because, you know, I got these kids out here. So I'm like Cocomelon, anything on Disney Plus. I'm like, Lord. Okay. But it's interesting because I've been watching this show on Netflix called Blacklist, and I'm not really a TV watcher. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I have been running so hard. I was talking to my counselor. She was like, I think you need to do something that doesn't require you to think, but that does consume some like attention. And so I was like, what do I do? She was like, do you watch TV? She was like, don't overindulge now. Don't be like a Netflix. I mean, it's taken me so long to get through all these episodes of this show, but I really love it. I really do. And that's what I've been watching recently. What I would recommend, and this is not because I want to be cute and holy, but what I really love to watch was The Chosen.
So good.
Holy goodness gracious.
I can't wait for the new season to come out.
That you're a believer. That's what I'm trying to say. If you even think that you love Jesus, you need to go watch that thing. go on and watch it. I cried so much. I can't even, I'll just tell all my business. I cried so much through that thing. The fact that we consume so much digitally high production, and now they have made something about our faith, digital high production, it hits in a whole different way. So I would recommend The Chosen.
It's so good. I watched the first episode and went to sign up as a partner. Like, just take my money.
Take all my money. Take everything I got.
Whatever you need to keep going, keep going forever.
Please keep going forever. So great.
When I pray, sometimes I have to remember not to think of Chosen Jesus.
I know. I know.
Because I imagine Chosen Jesus, like, smiling, understand, making a joke, being cool.
See you, girl. Being cool, right? I know. That's so good. That's good.
Great. What about a product that it made you want to text a friend, tell her she had to have it?
All right. There's this salve. And unfortunately, I done messed around and forgot who made it. So I can't recommend it to y'all. We'll put it in the show notes later. You know what I'm saying? But I didn't know what salve was. It's S-A-L-V-E. Okay. It's called From Scratch Farm. Okay. And it's homemade all-purpose salve. It has an L in it. Don't get it twisted. I'm country. I've been calling this thing salve. Okay. And my friends were like, sweet girl, please don't say that to anybody. I was like, what do you mean? She said, it's salve. It's a lavender all-purpose salve. It's like a little butter type situation that can go on all the things. After I had my son only about 4 months ago, 4 or 5 months ago, I just was crusty, Allie. Okay. For African-American listeners, that's called ashy. Okay. Mm-hmm. For non-African-American listeners, I realized that this wasn't a black thing. I didn't realize ashy was a black thing. It's dry skin. I was just cracking everywhere. Stuff was just cracking. My elbows looked all ratchet. They were even hurting because they were so dry. Oh. Y'all, I used this mug and it's like a new creation. My skin feels like my son's skin. I'm a newborn all over again.
Really?
Okay. It is healed. Yes.
You see it now? You see why I asked this question? I must learn about these things.
It is your season.
There you go.
It's
from Scratch Farm.
And it's lavender, so you know it smells good, but it rocked my world.
Last question for you. What are you excited about these days?
Man, here's the truth. Obviously, I'm super excited about the book, man. That mug took 2 years to do. I'm really, really excited about it. But I think more than that, I'm excited to hear what people will say after they read it. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, we have a women's course. We have walked women through a 6 to 8 month journey of healing. I've seen the restoration that comes with this content. Like, I know it's real and I know that God's hand is on it. But I'm really interested to see after people read this book and really vulnerable, crazy, wild parts of my story, what God's going to do in them. Like, it makes me weepy because I'm like, I wish that I had something like this to help me walk through my healing journey. To say, do this, go here, do this, change your mindset on this, transition this community out, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And God, I pray that I'll see testimonies and redemption stories. And I'm giddy about that, Allie. Really. I really am.
I love that. I love that. Yeah. I'm excited to watch it too. Yeah. Tell everybody where they can find you online.
Yay. It's Toni J. Collier on everything. TONIJCOLLIER. My middle name is Je T'aime to help you remember it. It means I love you. My mom got fancy, but it's on everything. And I hope that you come on over and see my crazy little crazy life.
That is great. Thanks for coming on the show.
Absolutely.
So great, right? You know I'm giving away copies of the book. Take a screenshot, share it on Facebook, share it on Instagram, tag me and tag Toni, and you will be entered to win. I'm giving away 5 copies of her book this week. Okay, now let's go to the coaching segment of the show. Here's the question. How did you handle chores with all those boys? I have so much to say. This is a great question, and I'm really excited to talk about it. We have always had the boys do chores, not in a way a lot of advice columns tell you to do it. For instance, some people say make your toddlers and preschoolers clean up after themselves and do all these other things. I never had any luck with that. I used to just clean up after my little kids when they were little all the time. The daily grind of keeping a bunch of little small kids alive and happy and just the beginnings of good manners completely wore me out. I never had any energy left to sing happy cleanup songs and try to cajole them into cleaning up their messes. It wasn't worth it. I mean, think about it. If your kid is going to freak out and melt down because air is touching him, or he only wants to leave the house dressed as Woody from Toy Story, you can't talk rationally with them. So I waited until they were old enough to kind of get it and take me seriously when I told them to do something. So as soon as each kid reached kindergarten age, it was game on. So that's when you start unloading and loading the dishwasher, and you start vacuuming at that age, and you start cleaning up after yourself. So here's what I don't do with kids. I don't make my kids clean their rooms with any regularity. Maybe 4 times a year, I'll tell them that they need to clean it up, but that's about it for the room. That's their business. I'll make sure they change their sheets regularly. We don't eat in our bedroom, so that keeps, you know, grossness at bay. So my goal is that the boys change their beds weekly, but we don't always hit it. Side note, I read some research recently that said the average adult male, I guess single male, changes his sheets 4 times a year. That's so gross. So the boys are well beyond that. But in our house, the kids load and unload the dishwasher, they vacuum, they clean the dining room table, they feed the dog, they take her out. All those things are just part of living in the household and earning your own keep. But you just got to pull your weight because you live here and work is part of living anywhere. Now, I will pay for things when things are above and beyond. So all of those things you don't get paid for. And I don't give my kids an allowance either. But I will pay for some things. One of the boys mows the lawn every week, so I'm willing to give him $10 a week for that. Then our 16-year-old, he puts laundry away every week. So I will wash it and dry it, and I'll lay it out flat, and or I'll put it in laundry baskets. So I lay some things out flat so they don't get wrinkled. And his job is to put everything away. My clothes, my husband's clothes, all the boys' clothes. And he gets $5 a week for that. And I would pay 10 times that much, honestly, to never have to put laundry away again. And then there are other random things around the house I'll pay for if kids want to earn money. If somebody comes to me and says, I want to buy a certain video game, that's $50. I'll write out a list of different chores and what each chore pays so they can earn that. Because it's just like real life. I own my own business. If I want to buy something, I have to figure out how much I need to work to earn the money to buy it. And I'm trying to raise the boys with this real life, like, this is how the world works point of view. In the real world, no work, no eat. So in my house, no work, no spending money. But here's what I want you to know. It does sound great that all the boys do chores, but it takes a lot of biting your tongue. It takes a lot of deep breaths and acceptance that things will not be done all that well sometimes. So when your kids are doing dishes, for instance, you want to put away your good plates. I ordered a set of white dishes from Amazon. When the boys were really little, we did plastic tumblers that were BPA-free so they could load and unload the dishwasher and it wouldn't bother me. Dishes are going to get chipped. Your glassware is going to break. And that's okay because in the bigger picture, it gets a lot of work off your shoulders and it teaches kids personal responsibility. In fact, I read an article in the New York Times a few years ago called Happy Children Do Chores. You can Google that one in the New York Times. And it dives into the needs of kids to have responsibility. We live in a culture that I think overvalues sports and academics, but we forget to teach our kids how to be responsible members of a family, how to be responsible members of the community, how to make sure that we're raising kids who know that they are not the center of the universe. And yeah, they need to earn their keep. And life, real life, demands work and responsibility. Are sports important? Yeah. Are academics important? Yeah. But being a great member of a family and a member of a community and a member of society, that's really important too. Now, that article in the New York Times, I will link it in the show notes because it really is a great read. Okay, now let's talk about recommendations. The movie. At the time I'm recording this, I haven't seen it. I'll admit it to you, but I'm going to go out on another limb like I did recently. I think I was right. This one is Knives Out, Glass Onion. Now, if you saw the first Knives Out, you know it is a brilliant movie. It's by Rian Johnson. It was maybe the best movie of the year that came out that year. I loved it so much. I'm willing to go out on the limb and say this is going to be terrific again. I have that much faith in it. So if you haven't seen it, I'm going to recommend Knives Out, Glass Onion. I believe it's on Netflix. I have tickets to go see it in the theater. And then it's on Netflix too, but it has a really short run in the theater and I want to see it there. Okay, song. You know it's Christmas time for me. I am a rebel. I'm a secret Christmas song listener pre-Thanksgiving. So here's the song this week. It is Joy to the World from the Queen herself, Whitney Houston, and the Georgia Mass Choir. If that song doesn't put you in a good mood, you may not have a pulse. We'll link it in the show notes, but don't forget, I have that Christmas playlist on Spotify. Just search up Holly Jolly Christmas from Allie Worthington, 4 hours of Christmas song joy. Now, instead of a product this week, I'm going to give you a tip. I was with a friend. She saw me do something that she had never heard of. She had no idea about. This is makeup. You may know. You may not know. But I took my metal eyelash curler that's like $5 from any store, and I warmed it up with my hairdryer. Now, here's the thing. You always test it on your wrist to make sure it's not hot because, yes, I have burned my eye before. So you want it to be warm, and then you use it on your eyelashes, and it gives your eyelashes amazing curl. She had no idea. So just like a regular curling iron, if you heat it up, your hair is going to hold the curl. Same thing with eyelashes. But make sure you don't overheat it. Test it on your skin first and make sure it's not too hot. But if you haven't tried this before, it just may change your life. It will definitely change your eyelashes. So I'm here for parenting this week and movies and makeup tips. We have the most random conversations, don't we? But I'm glad you're here for it. So thanks for spending this time with me this week. I love that we get to spend this time together. I love how you invest in yourself. You invest in your emotional health and your spiritual health and the health of your career. That's why you're here every week, learning something that's going to help you get healthier, to live the life that God has for you, and to improve life just little by little every single day. So keep stepping up, keep showing up, and keep loving well, because you cannot break a woman who gets her strength from God. I'm honored to be a small part of coaching and equipping you every week. I'll be back with you Monday, and I hope you have a great day.